You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on the power of full engagement. More wisdom in less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Notes on the power of full engagement. Managing energy, not time, is the key to high performance and personal renewal. By Jim Lohr and Tony Schwartz. As always, we'll start with a quote. Every one of our thoughts, emotions, and behaviors has an energy consequence, for better or for worse. The ultimate measure of our lives is not how much time we spend on the planet, but rather how much energy we invest in the time that we have. The premise of this book and of the training we do each year with thousands of clients is simple enough. Performance, health, and happiness are grounded in the skillful management of energy. End quote. That is Jim Lohr and Tony Schwartz from The Power of Full Engagement, which is a great book. I read it for the second time on my Kindle as I prepared this note, and I basically highlighted half the book. It's so densely packed with big ideas that we can apply to our lives that if you're feeling low on energy, or if you're the kind of person who likes to play full out and is always looking for ways to optimize, this book is pretty much on the must-buy list. Grounded in the research and consulting they've done with the world's greatest athletes, Jim Lohr and Tony Schwartz provide a set of ideas and tools to help what they call corporate athletes function at optimal levels of performance. At the heart of their wisdom is the fact that, quote, energy, not time, is the fundamental currency of high performance. In this note, we'll start with the four principles of full engagement, and then take a look at a handful of some of my favorite big ideas on how to get our full engagement on. If you're feeling it, get the book. It's loaded with case studies and practical tools to help you take your energy and life to the next level. Very powerful stuff. All right, we will start with the first big idea, the four principles of full engagement. Quote, principle one, full engagement requires drawing on four separate but related sources of energy, physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. Principle two, because energy diminishes both with overuse and with underuse, we must balance energy expenditure with intermittent energy renewal. Principle three, to build capacity, we must push beyond our normal limits, training in the same systematic way that elite athletes do. Principle four, positive energy rituals, highly specific routines for managing energy, are the key to full engagement and sustained high performance. End quote. Well, that's the brilliant book in an itty-bitty nutshell. Now let's explore a few of the dozens of big ideas on how to bring those principles to life. We'll start with sprinters versus long-distance runners. Quote, think for a moment about the look of many long-distance runners. Gaunt, sallow, slightly sunken, and emotionally flat. Now visualize a sprinter, such as Marion Jones or Michael Johnson. Sprinters typically look powerful, bursting with energy and eager to push themselves to their limits. The explanation is simple. No matter how intense the demand they face, the finish line is clearly visible 100 or 200 meters down the track. We too must learn to live our own lives as a series of sprints, fully engaging for periods of time and then fully disengaging and seeking renewal before jumping back into the fray to face whatever challenges confront us. End quote. That's really powerful. So picture a world-class marathon runner in your mind. Got it? Sort of corpse-like, huh? Now, picture a world-class sprinter. Beautiful, powerful, radiantly alive, and bursting with energy, huh? Of course, Marion Jones was also on steroids, but hey, you get the idea. Now, the book is all about the fact that we need to approach life like a series of sprints, oscillating between periods of intense engagement and equally intense renewal. Unfortunately, most of us try to break the naturally oscillating rhythms of life and wind up flatlining. Which leads us to the next big idea, the pulse of life. Quote, nature itself has a pulse, a rhythmic, wave-like movement between activity and rest. Think about the ebb and flow of the tides, the movement between seasons, and the daily rising and setting of the sun. Likewise, all organisms follow life-sustaining rhythms, birds migrating, bears hibernating, squirrels gathering nuts, and fish spawning, all of them at predictable intervals. So too, human beings are guided by rhythms. End quote. Beautiful. So nature has rhythms. We have rhythms. If we want to live our greatest lives, we've got to be good animals and line up to the deep rhythms of life. Lauren Schwartz discussed one way the pulse of life has been applied to our lives. They say, quote, "The concept of maximizing performance by alternating periods of activity with periods of rest was first advanced by Flavius Philostratus, AD 170 to 245 is when that guy lived, who wrote training manuals for Greek athletes. Russian sports scientists resurrected the concept in the 1960s and began applying it with stunning success to their Olympic athletes. Today, work-rest ratios lie at the heart of periodization, a training method used by elite athletes around the world." End quote. If you're an athlete or ever had a personal trainer, you're familiar with the idea of periodization. If you want to increase performance, you've got to balance work and rest. It's the pulse of high performance. It's powerful, simple stuff that, unfortunately, is too often ignored. Rather than honor the natural rhythmic needs for rest following exertion, or for exertion if we're resting too much, we tend to artificially compensate and keep ourselves running a marathon through caffeine, sugar, and other quick fixes. Not a good idea. Can you notice the rhythms in your life a little more? Are you in harmony with them? Brings us to the next big idea, the time between points. Quote, "To live like a sprinter is to break life down into a series of manageable intervals consistent with our own physiological needs and with the periodic rhythms of nature. This insight first crystallized for Jim when he was working with world-class tennis players. As a performance psychologist, his goal was to understand the factors that set apart the greatest competitors in the world from the rest of the pack. Jim spent hundreds of hours watching top players and studying tapes of their matches. To his growing frustration, he could detect almost no significant differences in their competitive habits during the points. It was only when he began to notice what they did between points that he suddenly saw a difference. While most of them were not aware of it, the best players had each built almost exactly the same set of routines between points. These included the way they walked back to the baseline after a point, how they held their heads and shoulders, where they focused their eyes, the pattern of their breathing, and even the way they talked to themselves." End quote. That's really cool. The authors continue by discussing the fact that in the 16 to 20 seconds between points, the best tennis players were able to lower their heart rates by as much as 20 beats per minute. The heart rates of their competitors who didn't have the same dialed-in rest rituals often stayed at the same levels. Now, imagine a tennis match going from the first set to the second to the third to the fourth and perhaps to the fifth set. If I'm playing against you and I can squeeze in 20 seconds of rest after an intense burst of activity dozens and dozens of times while you can't, who do you think will be sharper at the end of the match? And therefore, of course, more likely to win consistently? The one who knows how to oscillate, right? Well, it's the same with life. If we're going all the time and don't build in the practices that allow for work-rest cycles, we're going to burn out. All right, the next big idea. It's a practical idea on the physical side of energy. Drink plenty of water, yo. Quote, "Drinking water, we have found, is perhaps the most undervalued source of physical energy renewal. Unlike hunger, thirst is an inadequate barometer of need. By the time we feel thirsty, we may be long since dehydrated. A growing body of research suggests that drinking at least 64 ounces of water at intervals throughout the day serves performance in a range of important ways. Dehydrate a muscle by as little as 3%, for example, and it will lose 10% of its strength and 8% of its speed. Inadequate hydration also compromises concentration and coordination." End quote. You drinking enough water? If not, get on that. As stated in principle number one, we have four primary sources of energy: physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. Our physical energy is our foundation. If it's wacky, the rest is in peril. They give oodles of ideas on how to rock our physical energy, from drinking water and breathing deeply, which is a huge source of energy, and getting plenty of sleep. Research shows your performance will strongly atrophy with even slight sleep deprivation, and that when most people are put in rooms without external stimuli, they'll still sleep 7 to 8 hours a night. So get your rest. They also talk about eating breakfast. It's called break the fast for a reason. And if you don't eat then, you kind of screw up your energy rhythms. So eat a great, low-glycemic, slow-burning breakfast. And they talk about having 5 to 6 smaller meals throughout the day. So what can you do to build your physical energy starting now? Next big idea is turn off the TV, please. Quote, television, for example, is one of the primary means by which most people relax and recover. For the most part, however, watching television is the mental and emotional equivalent of eating junk food. It may provide a temporary form of recovery, but it is rarely nutritious, and it is easy to consume too much. Researchers such as Mihai Csikszentmihalyi have found that prolonged television watching is actually correlated with increased anxiety and low-level depression. End quote. Dope. So we clearly need to relax and recover, but skip the TV, will ya? Go for a walk, hang out with your family and friends, take a bath, read a book, open your journal, get a massage, meditate, do yoga, whatever. Just unplug the TV, pretty please. Next big idea is to be fully engaged emotionally. Quote, to be fully engaged emotionally requires celebrating what the Stoic philosophers called anacoluthia, the mutual entailment of the virtues. By this notion, no virtue is a virtue by itself. Rather, all virtues are entailed. Honesty without compassion, for example, becomes cruelty. Anacoluthia, the mutual entailment of virtues. I like that. To be fully emotionally engaged, we've got to be able to hold opposites and go full spectrum with our emotions. In fact, being able to hold contradictory emotions is the sign of a healthy individual. We tend to want to pick sides and be either tough or tender, either spontaneous or self-controlled, demonstrate openness or discretion, have a sense of patience or urgency, either or, either or, either or. Part of the power of full engagement is to work out our emotional muscles and learn to hold both. Can you use a little emotional strength training? Are you emphasizing one side of an emotion a little too much? Try consciously working the other side and hold both. Say yes and. You can be tough and tender, spontaneous and self-controlled. Demonstrate openness and discretion. Have a sense of patience and urgency. Yes and, yes and, yes and. Hold both to be fully engaged emotionally. Next big idea is, how am I that? Quote, difficult and unpleasant as it may be to accept, we often feel most hostile to those who remind us of aspects of ourselves that we prefer not to see. Ask someone to give a description of the personality type which he finds most despicable, most unbearable, and hateful, and most impossible to get along with, writes Edward Whitmont, and he will produce a description of his own repressed characteristics. These very qualities are so unacceptable to him precisely because they represent his own repressed side. Only that which we cannot accept within ourselves do we find impossible to live with in others. Think for a moment of someone you actively dislike. What quality in that person do you find most objectionable? Now ask yourself, how am I that? End quote. So we don't have the space in this note to get into shadows, projections, and all that good stuff, but this is a great exercise. The next time you're shadow boxing with someone and you're really getting frustrated, ask yourself what it is precisely that you find so annoying in the other person. Then ask yourself, how am I that? Because whether you like it or not, you are. And we just need to embody that, integrate it, allow it to become part of who we are. Then we won't be so triggered by other people who demonstrate that which we have repressed. All right, the next big idea is intrinsic versus extrinsic purpose. Quote, purpose also becomes a more powerful source of energy when it moves from being externally to internally motivated. Extrinsic motivation reflects the desire to get more of something that we don't feel we have enough of: money, approval, social standing, power, or even love. Intrinsic motivation grows out of the desire to engage in an activity because we value it for the inherent satisfaction it provides. Researchers have long found that intrinsic motivation tends to prompt more sustaining energy. A study conducted by the University of Rochester's Human Motivation Research Group found, for example, that people whose motivation was authentic, defined as self-authored, exhibited more interest, excitement, and confidence, as well as greater persistence, creativity, and performance than a control group of subjects who were motivated largely by external demands and rewards. End quote. How about you? Where's your motivation coming from? Are you doing everything you can to accumulate money, praise, and toys? Well, that would be extrinsic motivation. Nothing wrong with the money, praise, and toys, of course, but if that's your primary motivation, then you're losing out on some opportunities for higher levels of creativity and performance. The trick is to follow your heart, to be intrinsically motivated. Build your life from the inside out, doing the things that really matter to you and that make you feel good when you do them, with or without any potential rewards. As Ayn Rand says, you must be the kind of man who can get things done. But to get things done, you must love the doing, not the secondary consequences. So what do you love doing? Rock that and let the secondary consequences flow to you as a byproduct of your passion. Next big idea is precision and specificity. Quote, a broad and persuasive array of studies confirms that specificity of timing and precision of behavior dramatically increase the likelihood of success. The explanation lies once again in the fact that our conscious capacity for self-control is limited and easily depleted. By determining when, where, and how a behavior will occur, we no longer have to think much about getting it done. A series of experiments have confirmed this pattern. In perhaps the most dramatic experiment of all, a group of drug addicts were studied during withdrawal, a time when the energy required to control the urge to take drugs severely compromises their ability to undertake nearly any other task. As part of the effort to help find employment post-rehabilitation, one group was asked to commit to writing a short resume before 5 o'clock p.m. on a particular day. Not a single one succeeded. A second group was asked to complete the same task, but also to say exactly when and where they would write the resume. 80% of that group succeeded. End quote. This is a really big idea. I'd heard a million times that what gets scheduled gets done, but I always thought it was important but kind of pom-pom-waving time management self-dev stuff. To see the research so clearly stated in this book, and they gave other examples, show the importance of this is striking. In sum, you are far more likely to get something done when you set the exact time and place for when you'll do it. So start making that practice a ritual, will you? Decide when and where you're going to do your important stuff. Much more likely to get it done. Next big idea is positive rituals. Quote, we use the word ritual purposefully to emphasize the notion of a carefully defined, highly structured behavior. In contrast to will and discipline, which require pushing yourself to a particular behavior, a ritual pulls at you. Think of something as simple as brushing your teeth. It's not something that you ordinarily have to remind yourself to do. Brushing your teeth is something to which you feel consistently drawn, compelled by its clear health value. You do it largely on automatic pilot, without much conscious effort or intention. The power of rituals is that they ensure that we use as little conscious energy as possible where it is not absolutely necessary, leaving us free to strategically focus the energy available to us in creative, enriching ways. End quote. So the book is all about optimizing our energy, and the authors provide a very compelling case that our willpower is actually A, much weaker than we think, and B, much more draining when employed than we think. Every time we have to consciously think about whether or not we're going to do something, we deplete energy, and that adds up. Researchers say that 95% of our behavior is habitual, 95%. Only 5% is conscious. The challenge is systematically building rituals into our lives that allow us to put the energy-enhancing behaviors on autopilot. As they say, quote, all great performers rely on positive rituals to manage their energy and regulate their behavior. And they say the more exacting the challenge and the greater the pressure, the more rigorous our rituals need to be, end quote. That's powerful. The more exacting the challenge, the more rigorous our rituals need to be. Robin Sharma, one of the world's leading experts on greatness, you can see the notes on the monk who sold his Ferrari, says the same thing. In his studies of the world's most exemplary human beings, he's discovered they all demonstrated one key attribute, consistency on the fundamentals. They don't need to think about their fundamentals, their rituals, they're automatic. How about you? Are your fundamentals rituals? Or do you need to have willpower to do them? Jack Canfield, in his great book, The Success Principles, says that 99% is a bitch and 100% is a breeze. Basically, if you need to think about whether you're going to meditate or exercise or not yell at your spouse and kids or whatever, if you need to think about that every time, you're never going to have it locked in consistently. It's got to be non-negotiable and made into a ritual that pulls you toward it rather than something you go kicking and screaming to. Make sense? This is big. So what ritual do you need to build into your life? Just pick one thing and rock it. All right, the last big idea. Jump ahead to the end of your life. Quote, across cultures, religions, and time itself, people have admired and aspired to the same universal values. Among them, integrity, generosity, courage, humility, compassion, loyalty, perseverance, while rejecting their opposites, deceit, greed, cowardice, arrogance, callousness, disloyalty, and sloth. To begin to explore more deeply the values that are most compelling to you, we suggest that you set aside uninterrupted time to respond to the following questions. Jump ahead to the end of your life. What are the three most important lessons you have learned, and why are they so critical? Think of someone that you deeply respect. Describe three qualities in this person that you most admire. Who are you at your best? What one-sentence inscription would you like to see on your tombstone that would capture who you really were in your life? End quote. So your spiritual energy is the deepest source of your power. To tap it, we've got to know who we are and what we stand for. And we've got to live in integrity with those values. So, who are you and what do you stand for? Take some quiet time and reflect on those great questions and whatever else you feel inspired to explore. And build your purpose muscles that fuel your spiritual energy as we go out and enjoy the power of full engagement. That is a quick look at the note. I will now share some other notes I think you'll enjoy, and then some quotes from the sidebar. So if you like this, I think you'll also dig Body Mind Mastery by Dan Millman, Overachievement by John Elliott, Strength for Life by Sean Phillips, Mastery by George Leonard, the Notes on Constructive Living by David Reynolds, and the Notes on the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. Now for some quotes. These are all by the authors, Jim Lohr and Tony Schwartz. Character, the courage and conviction to live by our deepest values, is the key muscle that serves spiritual energy. The more scheduled and systematic these rituals became, the more renewal they provided. Creating positive rituals is the most powerful means we have to effectively manage energy in the service of full engagement. In short, money may not buy happiness, but happiness may help you get rich. A value in action is a virtue. From an energy perspective, negative emotions are costly and inefficient. Much like a gas-guzzling car, they draw down our energy stores at a rapid rate. Take a moment to consider how broad a range of emotional muscles you have in your own life. In all likelihood, you will discover that you have considerably more strength on one side of the spectrum than on the other. At the most practical level, our capacity to be fully engaged depends on our ability to periodically disengage. Periods of recovery are likewise intrinsic to creativity and to intimate connection. Sounds become music in the spaces between notes, just as words are created by the spaces between letters. It is in the spaces between work that love, friendship, depth, and dimension are nurtured. Without time for recovery, our lives become a blur of doing, unbalanced by much opportunity for being. Energy is simply the capacity to do work. Our most fundamental need as human beings is to spend and recover energy. If nothing succeeds like success, it is equally true that nothing fails like excess. Because change requires moving beyond our comfort zone, it is best initiated in small and manageable increments. We build emotional, mental, and spiritual capacity in precisely the same way that we build physical capacity. And finally, to maintain a powerful pulse in our lives, we must learn how to rhythmically spend and renew energy. So there you go. There's a quick look at a great book, The Power of Full Engagement. Managing energy, not time, is the key to high performance and personal renewal. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a great day. Here's your full engagement. Looking forward to sharing more with you soon.
We hope you enjoyed this Philosopher's Note. Please go to www.philosophersnotes.com to download more.